live from Everbank Field, 1010 XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your hosts Mike Dempsey and Tony Smith.
Ah, Tony, wasn't to be. We wanted one more piece of help from the Atlanta Falcons. I guess we'll get another chance to lay down for the Jaguars a little bit later on this year, but it would have been nice to get a little help out of those guys yesterday.
Yeah, it would have been, but you didn't get the help. And look, we talked about this a little bit on Friday. The Jags have put themselves in a position where, yeah, you can watch the scoreboard this weekend, but with still a month and a half left in this season, it's about what the Jags are going to do for these last six games a lot more than it is about what Houston or Indianapolis are doing at this point. So win or lose yesterday for those two teams, the Jaguars still feel like they control how this thing's going to work out
for the most part
in 2015, because like you said, I don't expect any of these three teams to win out, but there are opportunities because you still play Indianapolis and Houston to knock them down that peg and not have to count on Atlanta or the New York Jets to do that dirty work for you. You play them. Go beat them.
But you're going to have to count on somebody at some point just based on the overall division records of all the teams.
Nobody in this division is winning out.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, somebody, but, you know, that would have been a nice one, either one of those, because, you know, every game that those teams win is one more that the Jags have less wiggle room in terms of the one loss record as far as going forward. But, Jeff's right. You saw how San Diego looked yesterday. They looked atrocious. Go out and beat them this weekend. Bottom line, and then we can continue to have this conversation about where things stand. We can continue to take peeks at the scoreboard for the next several weeks. Head into December, playing meaningful football. The way to do that is to get a win this week against the San Diego Chargers. Today's fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships. Just ask you, basically, how'd you spend yesterday? Jags off. How much NFL football did you take in? We'll talk about our day, our viewing experience, and what we watch around the National Football League. Pretty fascinating. By the way, Adrian Peterson was second in the Heisman voting. Jeff brought that up in his freshman year at Oklahoma, Tony. And in today's day and age, may have won it, you know, going back, because there was still some sentiment that freshmen should not win the Heisman Trophy back in 2004. He came in second to Matt Leinart, who was an outstanding college quarterback, but Adrian Peterson went for 1,925 yards in his freshman season with 15 rushing touchdowns for the Oklahoma Sooners, and really was about an 1,100-yard guy the next 2 years with the Sooners after that. So his one good chance, he finished second to Matt Leinart. So there you have it. But Cam Newton, in fact, could be the rare guy to win the Heisman Trophy and an NFL MVP. Certainly no NFL, no quarterback has done it, as Jeff and Dan talked about a little bit this morning. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the number. We'll talk any aspect of Jaguar football or around the National Football League as well. Joe Flacco done for the year. Yet another star-level player. And trust me, in Baltimore, they certainly think he's a star-level player. He may not have the cachet of a Tom Brady or some others, but he's certainly been important to that franchise and has a hell of a postseason record. They weren't going anywhere in terms of that this year, but nonetheless, Joe Flacco with the torn ACL is going to put the beginning of next year in a little bit of jeopardy as well. We'll take a time out here. We'll come back, take your calls if you're so inclined to get on board. 641-1010. They are also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. John Osier from Jaguars.com is going to stop in and join us today as well. So we got a lot to do on this morning with the Jags having the weekend off. Well, we know this. They didn't lose this weekend. They still have a two-game winning streak. They've won three out of four. None of that changes regardless of what the Colts and the Texans did yesterday. With Fat Tony, I'm Mike Dempsey. It's Jaguars Today on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday here on 1010 XL 92.5 FM.
It's time for Oh No's with Jaguars.com's John Osher.
Oh No's.
Presented by Florida Pump Service on Jaguars Today.
All right, Jaguars Today on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. North Florida's largest dealer of firearms and accessories is Wild West Guns and Gold. Everything from revolvers to sporting arms and everything in between. Semi-auto pistols, rifles, shotguns, you name it. Wild West Guns and Gold will meet or beat any gun shop's price in the USA, guaranteed. You can even trade your gold for guns at Wild West Gold and Guns and Gold. Guns4Jacks.com, the website. Stop by and see them on South Lane Avenue or call 693-0777 for Wild West Guns and Gold. John Osier is here with us. Hello, Johnny O. Your mic, however, is over there.
But
there.
Can you trade your guns for gold?
You can trade your gold for guns. I don't think it goes the other way.
I
don't think they're buying guns with gold, but they are buying gold.
I just feel
guns.
Like at some point there should be somewhere where you could do both.
Maybe. I don't know. Maybe that's a cottage industry for you to open
maybe
up.
That's I'll look into that.
On those Sundays when you'd have nothing to do, when you sit around and I don't know what you
Let's face it, this gig's only going to last so long.
I would think so.
Maybe that's what's next.
It could be, this could be the week for you to look into other lines of employment. What did you do yesterday with yourself? Did you watch much NFL football?
I was doing some stuff in the garage, bringing in Christmas tree type stuff.
So you carried in a few boxes of decorations.
Yeah, well,
this is, quote, doing some stuff in the garage.
Yeah, didn't quite get to the decorations part, but we had two artificial trees we set up. So we're sort of priming the pump for Christmas.
Two tree family.
We could do a show on my wife's Christmas decorations. It's a thing.
Interesting.
It's staggering.
I have this whole thing about the Christmas tree. I think it's so ridiculous. I mean, the whole concept of like cut down a tree, da da da, that you're gonna throw away in a week, and the whole thing is, and Christmas is not about the tree to me. So, anyway, we'd go to my in-laws every year for Christmas, and they'd all be all about cutting down a fresh tree or buying a freshly cut tree. And I always joke with my mother-in-law, 'cause she thought it was the most, you know, garish thing ever, that I said, if I had my own tree, if we're doing Christmas at my house, I'd have an artificial silver tree with nothing but bright red balls on it, because I thought that would be like the most obnoxious thing she could think of. And now that, because I work a lot more during football season around that time, I can't really travel up there, we do have a little silver tree at my house with nothing but bright red Christmas balls on it. So there you have it.
So I did that, and was able to sort of come in and see the end of the Colts game. And I remember being 21-7. I was thinking, okay, here we go. And then I came back in, and my wife says, well, it's 21-21.
Yeah.
And I kind of knew then. But, you know, I'm kind of with you. I watched and kept up with both of those games. But there's six games to go. And if the Jaguars win, if they win, they can take care of their own stuff. And at some point, you're supposed to win games down the stretch to get in.
Right, so, and not have all the other team just stink worse than you.
So, I guess until they do what they've done the last few weeks a little more, I'm not really, really all that hyped up about the playoffs. I want to see this team keep doing what they're doing. And then if they earn a couple more and stay in it, then the last month, I guess I'll get really excited and sort of scoreboard watch a little more. You know, I mean,
I hear what you're saying. But for me, it's fun just because it's not such a pipe dream. You know what I wanted?
Oh, I was absolutely watching this. I'm not discounting that I wasn't paying attention. I just know I don't know that this team is capable yet of running the table and doing that sort of thing. So I guess I want to see a couple more before I think that sort of thing could happen.
Right. My only point is, whether you watch yesterday or not, it's just I wanted this team to be in games in December that were meaningful, and not meaningful like you've got to run the table and 15 other things have to happen for you to have a chance to be in the mix for a playoff spot. I don't think 15 other things do need to happen. Obviously,
they're going still to need feels to get like that.
A smidgen of help somewhere along the line. That's why yesterday would have been nice. All these games, while we say, there are six games left, well, next week we'll say there are five, and on and on and on. And you look at next week's opponents for those two teams, not very daunting. I mean, I think they're going to be favored in their games as well. But the Jags just need to go out and not worry about that and take care of their own business against a team that looked really bad yesterday in San Diego.
Yeah, and I think that's the biggest thing where I'm not really too jacked up about watching the others yet. Is even though it's San Diego, you know, this team, meaning the Jaguars, has not done anything to make me think that there are easy victories down the road. So there's so much this team has to do and has to play well, and it's a small margin that it just needs to do it a couple more times. And, you know, I still don't know, frankly. That was really San Diego's first real dog game where they just got handled. So I don't think they're going to put two of those in a row. So I think it's going to be tight on Sunday.
Oh, I don't think the Jags, we can take for granted that they are going to blow anyone out.
No, but it's also the most beat up that San Diego's been this year offensively. True. So you don't know if this is what they look like when it's Stevie Johnson and Inman that they have to rely on at the wide receiver position, because that's what they're left to at this point.
And are they done and know it? Who knows? I mean,
well, I think they've got to know it at this point in time.
Well, or are they going to play like it?
Right. I know what you're saying, but I do think
that every team does.
That, you know, how they react to it, I don't know, but they've got to realize that, mm-hmm. you know, it's a pipe dream now. It's over with as far as that
I mean,
goes.
I'm watching Antonio Gates on the sideline and Phillip Rivers got into it yesterday. I mean, about halfway through the second quarter, Gates didn't have a catch. He felt like he had been open a couple times and Rivers hadn't found him, and they were going after one another on the sideline, and I haven't seen those two guys do that. In all the years I've been watching those
well,
guys play
well, we don't typically
together.
See the San Diego Chargers in
right.
this state of disrepair.
So who knows what's going on in that locker room right now.
Let's get a couple calls in while we have John Osier here. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010 is the number. The senior writer from Jaguars.com in with us this morning as we welcome Brad to the program, a self-proclaimed longtime member of the John Osier Fan Club. Hello, Brad. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. How about you guys?
Great. What's up?
Well, I wanted to talk about the race for the AFC South. Obviously, kind of disappointing to see both the Colts and Texans win yesterday, but I think now, hopefully, not that I care so much about what the talking heads have to say, but I think you can safely say the AFC South has kind of found some wind here in the second half of the season. We're no longer the scourge of the NFL, but anyway... So talking about the Jags and their chances realistically, I think it's going to take at least 8, if not 9 wins to win the AFC South. Kind of disappointing to see the Colts, you know, they almost beat undefeated Carolina. They beat the undefeated Broncos. The Texans handling the undefeated Bengals, you know, just when we thought the Jags had a pretty solid chance. But I think if we can win all 3 of our division games that are left, which, again, a tall order, and 2 of the 3 are away, maybe if we just win one of those 3 other games, you know, Chargers, Falcons, Saints, we might have a chance. But realistically, I think it's going to take 5 out of 6, which like John was saying, with the way this team has played, you know, I don't know that we can count on that, but if nothing else, I think it's just great that, you know, we can have fun here at the end of the season. We're winning games and, we've talked about the arrow pointing up so long now, but I think the fan base as a whole is really starting to kind of see that. So that's really all I wanted to say, and I wanted to hear what you guys think about how many wins it might take to win the South.
All right, thank you, Brad. First off, you know, they may not be the alone in being the dregs division of the National Football League, but they're right there with the NFC East and the AFC South are
the same
division.
Yeah, there are still some dreg qualities.
Yes, trust me. Neither one of those divisions is very good. Although Houston and Indy winning this week makes it look a little bit more respectable at the top. At least there are 2 500 yeah. teams in the AFC South.
Well, I think the reality is, as we talked about, I think a few weeks ago, there's 6 or 7 good teams, and there's about 23, 24 that are right there together. And it's very much a year where you can tell the elite teams are very easy to see. And everybody else can kind of beat each other. You know, you say, well, the Colts pulled a huge upset beating Atlanta. Atlanta's not playing any better than most 4-6 teams right now. So the upsets in the South that have happened are realistically the Colts beating Denver and Houston beating Cincinnati when they beat them. Other than that, all these games, all these teams, 4-6 versus 3-7 versus 5-5 right now, it just feels like the entire league outside of those elite teams, which we saw a couple of them last night, are really sort of the same team. And there happens to be 4 of them in the South, 4 of them in the NFC East. And it's just sort of a league, again, where except for those elite guys, it's all sort of the same.
I will say to Brad's point about how many wins it will take to win the South, I think it's a lot more likely after yesterday that it will take 9. Mm-hmm. Because if you sit here right now and you say, okay, let's win those 3 division games and win one more to get us to 8. All right, well, okay, Indy and Houston are going to play each other. So one of them is going to win one of those games. And if it's Indy, then they're going to have a better division record than the Jaguars, period, no matter if the Jags win out or not. That would be their fourth division win. So the question is, do they win 2 of their other 5 remaining games? I would think they've certainly got a chance to do that. I mean, there's some weak teams on their schedule right. as well. My question is, you know, to me, yesterday was such a great opportunity for Atlanta being up 21-7 because I think Hasselbeck's arm strength goes down the rest of the season. I think each week it's going to get progressively worse. He's 40 years old, and I don't know how he's going to hold up having to play extended week after week after week after week. You know, he played the 2 games in 5 days earlier this year, but he just had 2 weeks off to get ready for this last stretch run. So it would have been great coming right out of the gates off the bye if they could have been saddled with a loss, because I do think they'll start to tick in a downward direction with his play.
Yeah, I've done the same thing all year, sort of focused on the Colts as the team. I think right now Houston's playing significantly better than anybody else in the division. Even Indy, they beat Denver, but at the time they beat them, when you look at it, Peyton was playing so bad that Denver was unbeaten, but they sort of, looking back, they feel very vulnerable in that game.
Yeah, and Peyton got exposed the next week against
Kansas City. Yeah, and, you know, Houston is the team that seems to be playing where they're not in these razor-close games right now.
Well, their defense is starting to play the way the individual talent dictates that they're capable of.
Right, but the Colts, even yesterday, if you look at the Falcons after the 5-0 start, the Falcons in the last month have been, I mean.
I understand.
So,
I didn't think Matt Ryan looked good at any point in the game yesterday. And, you know, he threw 3 touchdowns, but it just, I don't know, something's off with him this year.
It feels like there's 6 games left for all these teams in the AFC South. Doesn't it feel like all 6 of these games for every team, that you're just flipping a coin who wins? That they're all going to be these games like the Colts played yesterday and like the Jaguars played on Thursday. I don't know that you would be shocked. I haven't analyzed the Colts or the Texans' schedule, but you probably wouldn't be shocked if they lost any of the games. You were saying they have easy games this week. You wouldn't be shocked if any of these teams won or lost their remaining games.
No, I would. Look, I say relatively easy. Tampa Bay goes to Indy. Now, Tampa just handled Philly. Right? But Houston hosts New Orleans, which has looked like a train wreck for most of the season. You know, they had that little brief spurt where they won a couple or three or three out of 4.
At the same time, you wouldn't be stunned if either team's lost either.
Wouldn't be stunned, but certainly you look at it on paper, you're like, they're not as daunting as some of the games they played in recent weeks, at least on paper.
Yeah, and but the way the league has gone, again, outside those top guys, I just don't know. There's very little that shocks me if it doesn't involve those top 6 or 7 teams right now.
All right, let's get another caller on. We have Johnny O still with us here, and that would be Desmond up next on the South Side. What's up, Desmond? How are you?
All right, how are y'all? I'm about to say happy Thanksgiving to everybody that's out there listening. And
all right, same to you.
Thanks, sir. And yesterday, man, Jack Wall was saying, man, Sunday is so boring without seeing them play. So what I did yesterday was, you know, I recorded the game for Thursday night and studied it. And I think his name Hopper, number 86, man, that 3rd-and-1 that when Gus decided to go for it, then he changed his mind to kick it to take us up 6.
Yeah, Clay Harbor.
Harbor missed a wide open the linebacker. If he would have blocked the linebacker, it would have been a touchdown. I mean, I think for us as a team and taking this 10 days off, we need to look over film and get passing blocks better. And Blake needs to really zone, man, like stop looking at one person and look around the field, because he had Mercedes Lewis open. One red zone was there. He had Allen Robinson open. And one red zone was there, son. But I feel like if we can do that, if I feel like we can win out, because I know the Colts are 3-0 in the division, right? So say the Colts lose 3 games and we win the rest of our games and everything comes to a tiebreaker between Houston, Colts, and the Texans. But Houston, Colts, and us, who would be in the playoffs if it comes out to a tiebreaker? I'll take the comments off the air.
All right, well, likely wouldn't be the Jags, because odds are that one of those teams is going to beat them on a tiebreaker. You know, if they all end up in a 3-way tie, again, it depends on, do the Colts beat Houston? Because if they do, that's enough to put them in over the Jags. Or, for that matter, do the Colts beat Tennessee?
Right.
Right? And if they get one more division win, the Jags can't match them on division record.
It's tough to do scenarios yet. Because of your last sentence.
I guess they couldn't match them. on division record, right? If they got one more, because the Jags get to 4-2 in the division when it's all said and done. They have three more division games left.
Yeah, because they're 1-2 in the division now. So
right,
yeah,
they could get to 4-2. So the, you know, I mean, I don't know. There's so many permutations that can play out,
and these guys all playing each other.
Just beat San Diego.
Yeah, there's too many if-then scenarios. That's why I said earlier today, beat San Diego, show you can win 4 or 5, and then maybe a week after that we can start talking about tiebreaker.
All right, quickly, though, before we let you go, get back to the point about Blake Bortles there. I read your latest Ozone mailbag and a couple of the things you said that the issues that Blake has are obviously still too many bad turnovers, right?
Yeah.
Was one of them.
And amazingly, it's just he'll go stretches in the game where you think, okay. And then, like the other night, there's that one play a game
throw
where as soon as it leaves his hands, you go, oh.
Right. So you got that. And the other one was not trusting the pocket and getting out of the pocket a little bit too soon.
And I don't know if it's not trusting it or just that instinct he has to move around and make the play and buy a little time. But I thought that he held the ball into some sacks the other night, and I think he's done that through the course of the season. And I don't think the line has played perfect, but in this league, you have to be able to help your linemen out, I think, a little more than he has this year.
Granted, and I'm not debating those points. My point to bring those up was to go with what Desmond brought up about missing open guys. He has missed. Now, I'm sure every quarterback from time to time doesn't see an open guy. Like, you watch a film, you're like, oh, man, how did I miss that? But it seems like every game there are a handful of plays that Tony and I sit here and watch and we say, wow, that could have been a touchdown. That could have been a touchdown. Mm-hmm. How does that factor into those other two issues that we're talking about?
Yeah, it's probably a third issue. I would sort of tend to agree with what you said about, I guess, every quarterback probably misses those. And when you're analyzing your team, you see it a lot more. So I don't know that that is as big of an issue. Certainly, if you hit him, you have more touchdowns. But I think that happens within the course of a game for most quarterbacks.
All right. I know you got to run, but what do you have coming up over the next few days?
We get into our normal week coverage a day early this week, meaning we'll have Jaguars.com live tomorrow. We'll have our normal Wednesday coverage, which is our biggest midweek day, on Tuesday because the team is having no media access on Thursday. So everything's moved up a day.
All right, there he is, John Osier, Jaguars.com. Check him out there on Twitter, at John Osier, and as well multiple times a week here on Jaguars Today.
Multiple times.
I don't know.
Just whenever you can grab it.
It varies from time to, from week to week. Johnny, thank you,
man. All right, guys, thank you.
All right, there he goes, John Osier here with us. It is Jaguars Today on Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony coming back on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. Our Tom Bush Family Dealership's question of the day, asking you, with the Jags off yesterday, how much NFL did you end up watching, Tony? For me, I mean, I watched just 1 o'clock games because I wanted to see what the AFC South teams were going to do. Once those went final, started to watch a little Green Bay, Minnesota. Then I said, you know, now would be a prime time to take a little shut-eye, a little nap, and just about an hour till my kid comes in and wakes me up. He has no issue about waking his father up at any point. Dad, you want to watch X-Men First Class? Well, you know, did you need to wake me? Could you maybe watch that on your own without me? And I realize we own it, and I'm quite aware of my opportunity to watch it whenever I want, son. Thank you very much. So that ended that. And so we watched a little movie. I didn't watch any Sunday Night Football last night. Saw the highlights. Happy that Carson Palmer threw 4 touchdowns for fantasy purposes. However, it's more of a Walking Dead, into the Badlands, Talking Dead kind of night, which it typically is for me, by the way, on Sunday Night Football. I've usually had enough of the NFL between Thursday and all those early Sunday games by Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, I watched Sunday Night Football. I watched all the 4 o'clock games. I had a friend of mine that was having a birthday party earlier in the day, so I went over there for that, probably got home about halftime of the 1 o'clock game. So basically from halftime of the 1 o'clock games until Sunday Night Football ended, I was watching
How
football.
Old is his friend?
He is 30-something.
Yeah. When do people stop having their own birthday parties?
We had a potluck and then we played kickball. Like, it was just a bunch of adults outside playing kickball, so it was, I had a good time.
No, nah, it's fine. I'm just asking, like, 30th birthday, you know, milestone birthdays, I kind of get it. I was just curious, like, when do people, you know, stop?
I don't know.
Stop getting together.
I don't do a birthday party for myself.
Do you make a point to go out on your birthday, something like that?
No.
Nah, that's me either.
No.
I was just curious.
No, if some friends want to go out, and it happens to be my birthday.
Right,
like, we're taking you out for your birthday, okay, but it's not like I plan anything for myself on my birthday.
I gotcha. I guess I just don't remember the last time I went to an adult birthday party, was what it is, which probably means I'm very old and my memory is not what it used to be. Let's hear a little bit from Gus Bradley, Tony. This is going back to Friday. Some thoughts on Thursday night's game and just, you know, the usage of certain players. And I wanted to highlight some of what he said about Julius Thomas following the game. Again, this was after a day to kind of consider how things went on Thursday night. Gus was on a conference call on Friday and started with, talking about how to get Julius Thomas more involved in the red zone. He said some of the reads got in the way of Julius getting the ball more in that area of the field.
Well, there's plays, you know, a lot of it is, I think, that you got to go off your reads too, you know, on the progression. And it might be where he's taken away early in the progression. You know, we've got a lot of guys down there that have the ability to make plays in the red zone. A guy like Allen Robinson and Hearns, and you try to position it, you try to attack what the defense has shown, and then you go through your progression. And sometimes those reads take you to them and sometimes they don't.
I guess for me, Tony, you get a guy coming in, making as much money as he has, primarily because he's been such a good red zone weapon in his career, right? That's a big part of the attraction of signing Julius Thomas, that I would think that he would be pretty high in your read progression once you get the ball inside the 20-yard line. You know what I mean? And now, if defenses are doubling him and trying to take him away, certainly you've got to, you know, force the ball if you feel like you've got other playmakers. But the Jags are struggling to put the ball in the end zone. And I think there are a lot of people wondering, why aren't we just doing more to get Julius Thomas involved? And is he that high up in the read progression? And shouldn't he be if he's not?
Well, just because he may be the primary read and Blake got off of because it wasn't there.
Sure.
That could be the case with that, too. And you saw on Thursday night, he was clearly the primary read on the touchdown pass to Julius Thomas. They were both on the same page. Good route, good throw, touchdown Jaguars. So maybe it's just that the coverage has dictated that Blake Bortles look at something else down there on the goal line as well. Gus Bradley on Friday also asked about Julius, who's been dealing with a couple different injury issues, obviously, this year. He had the hand problem that caused him to miss some games, the abdominal injury when he came back from that, but said that he was feeling good going into that game.
I would say for him, you know, with his hand and, you know, with some of his injuries, it's good to see him. I watched him yesterday in warm-ups, and it really felt like he was 100%. I know this week he felt really good, you know, and you've got some threats now. We've got some guys that all are very capable players that have shown that they can make big plays for us. And so to spread those threats out is challenging at times.
We'll hear a little bit more from Gus coming up, as we didn't reflect much on postgame sound on Friday. Really spent more time with the boys who had made the trip over from Great Britain.
Yeah.
And, I always get myself in trouble between the UK, Great Britain, the British Isles, the whole nine, from England and Ireland specifically.
The island.
That's what I'm going with, from England and Ireland. But Irish Jag is back home. Staff will be back here for the game on Sunday against San Diego. So maybe he'll be the good luck charm. Could he watch three Jaguar victories in person this year, one in Wembley and two at Everbank? I'd certainly love for that to be the case. All right, we're going to take a timeout here. We'll come back with this date in football and the Honda drive around the NFL. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony on a Wild West Guns and Gold Monday. If you'd like to be a part of the program, 641-1010 is the phone number. It's also the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line. Fan feedback question of the day brought to you by the Tom Bush family of dealerships, asking you basically how much time did you spend with the National Football League yesterday with the Jaguars off? You can answer on the Jaguars Today Facebook page, or of course you can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony. It's Jaguars Today live at Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
Now, Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. And now, this date in football history.
All right, this Dayton football history is brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry. Let's go back to November 23rd, 1975. Minnesota quarterback Fran Tarkenton became the NFL's all-time completion leader at that point when he completed his 2,840th pass in the Vikings' 28-13 victory over the San Diego Chargers. Let's say that a lot this week. Victory over the San Diego Chargers. Famous birthdays for this date? Well, not a ton of super famous guys, but 1974, longtime Ravens linebacker Jamie Sharper, born in this date. He turned 41. The bane of Brent Beard's pronunciation existence, Ricky Jean-Francois, Tony, Ricky Jean Francois, as Brent Beard once infamously referred to him as one of our radio shows, turns 29 today, the longtime San Francisco 49er and now current Washington Redskin defensive lineman. Spencer Ware had a nice birthday for himself yesterday, a day early. He filled in for an injured Charcandrick West with a couple of touchdowns and over 100 yards for the Kansas City Chiefs. He turns 24 today. And Dallas Cowboys second-round pick Randy Gregory turned 23 years old today as well. This Dayton football brought to you by Dr. James McCall's Comprehensive and Cosmetic Dentistry, located on Gate Parkway. If you need cosmetic work done, or maybe you're just in the market for a family dentist, either way, you can call Dr. McCall's office at 620-9225, a certified Invisalign provider. They've got the Somnomed Custom Fit Snore Guard. Stop snoring. Make your family happy. Go call Dr. McCall at 620-9225 or visit jamesjmccall.com for a complete list of comprehensive care services. That is this date in football history.
Now the Honda Drive Around the NFL, brought to you by your First Coast Honda dealers.
Baltimore Ravens quarterback Joe Flacco tore his ACL on the game-winning drive for the Ravens yesterday. He will miss the rest of the season. Offseason free agent acquisition Matt Schaub will start in Joe Flacco's place for the Ravens. The Ravens also saw starting running back Justin Forsett break his right arm yesterday. He will also miss the rest of the 2015 season. Javoris Buck Allen produced over 100 yards combined yesterday after Forsett left the lineup. Atlanta Falcons running back Devonta Freeman left the Falcons' loss against Indianapolis with a concussion in the first quarter. Freeman now has to pass through the league's concussion protocol before he can return to the football field. And New York Jets star cornerback Darrell Revis also suffered a concussion yesterday against Houston, so he'll be in the protocol as well going forward.
Tony, I know you didn't because I already asked you this, but I will, for the sake of radio, say, Tony, did you see the tweet that Leroy Butler, Jacksonville-born and, you know, just a kind of a hometown hero kind of guy, put out in regards to Thursday night's game against for the Jags against the Tennessee Titans? Have you seen that?
No.
I know your answer was no, so but that was a setup question. But this was brought to my attention over the weekend because I didn't know either. I don't follow Leroy Butler on Twitter. He's at Leap, L-E-A-P, 36. He tweeted out this in regards to the Thursday night game. Jax is my hometown, but fans don't support the team. Lots of open seats. Just a shame. L.A., here they come. Is Leroy Butler that poorly informed on the state of this franchise that he would make that comment, or does he not care? I mean, I know he's a Green Bay Packer lifer. It's just because it's your hometown team doesn't mean you have to, you know, I guess, know what the hell's going on. But, I mean, that just seems incredibly strange to me. I do think, you know, a lot of what you see, you've got two areas to congregate in each end zone now. You've got the pool decks, and you've always had the very popular Bud Zone, never mind the fact that a lot of people who have the club seats have access to indoor concessions and different things, and so therefore they get up and take advantage of, they build those areas to make them attractive because that comes with part of the enhanced ticket price that you're going to be paying when you have a club seat. And so there are times when I think the attendance is outstanding and it doesn't always look representative in the crowd. If that's what he's talking about, I'm not sure. I'm not in the state, in the bowl. I'm not sitting in the press box watching the game. I'm watching it from a TV perspective, so I see what I see. But from everything I heard, the support on Thursday night was phenomenal for the Jacksonville Jaguars. This seems, you know, like, I expect that from people who have no clue about what's going on in the city of Jacksonville. I would think if this is your hometown team, maybe if you're going to comment on it in that regard, L.A., here they come? Really? That you'd be a little bit more informed if you're Leroy Butler.
Look, that's why the fight continues for Jaguars fans, right? I mean, it's that this conversation is still going on nationally, even if it doesn't need to be going on. It's clear somebody's going to Los Angeles, and it's happening soon, right?
Jacksonville's name, maybe not next year, though, if you read.
But it's gonna happen soon, and Jacksonville has not been attached to that at all.
Right.
I mean,
there are three teams for two spots.
Right. This idea that Jacksonville could potentially move to L.A., that was done 5 years ago. I mean, it's time to move past that rhetoric. If in 10 years the NFL is still working in London and things aren't working in Jacksonville for Shad Khan, then maybe this conversation can come up again. But I think it's a decade away from having to have that conversation about this team even potentially leaving this market at this point with what Shad Khan has done since he got here to Jacksonville. And really, the attendance numbers for Jacksonville are not bad. I mean, the stadium is still too big for the city that it happens to be in, because it needs to be for Florida, Georgia, and the Gator Bowl and some of the other events that this stadium happens to host. If it was built with the same kind of size as, like, I don't know, Soldier Field or Lambeau Field or these kinds of stadiums, the Jaguars would be, as far as a percentage, would be towards the top of the league. But instead, it's as big as it is, so the percentage comes down a little bit for the games with the market that they're trying to sell to. It's incredible the ignorance that is still out there. I know Marshall Faulk played that card too after some Jaguars fans went after him following his just ridiculous comments on the post game on Thursday night. He basically said, why don't the fans in Jacksonville show up and then we'll have a conversation? Well, for a guy who played his basically entire career in St. Louis, that's pretty hollow.
Right, as they're getting ready to pack up and leave.
Right. I mean, that's where St. Louis is probably going to be gone, and they're only filling up about 80% of their stadium on a week-by-week basis, and that's just tickets sold. They're selling 80% of their home tickets right now there in St. Louis. So anybody taking shots at the Jags, I think, is a little ridiculous at this point.
Yeah, the issue with Los Angeles now is you have St. Louis, you have Oakland, and you have San Diego all wanting to move there, but none of them apparently having the requisite votes from the National Football League owners to make that happen, or at least to make that happen without some kind of legal battle, because there's been some suggestion that Stan Kroenke could try to pull an Al Davis and say, I don't care what you say, I'm moving the team, and you can't stop me. You know, whether or not he'd be successful in doing that, I've read debate on both sides. I'm not smart enough to tell you which side would win on that. I don't think it's likely that he's going to try to take on the entire National Football League and move against their will. But you need 24 votes. That's a significant amount. That's three-quarters of the owners all agreeing to the same thing. Now, owners are okay with putting a team in L.A. The question is, though, which team? And it's not that so much that right now you're worried about having the 24 votes. You're just equally worried about having the 9 votes necessary to block one of your rivals in terms of trying to get to L.A. first from moving there themselves. It seems like the Raiders and Chargers are trying to team up together and make that happen and kind of make that a joint move. At least there's been some speculation. I'm sure if one of them was given the opportunity to move without the other, they would probably take it.
Sure.
But all it takes is 9 owners to block any one given proposal, and the feeling is right now there are at least 9 owners that would be against each of these individual teams moving, that the expansion to Los Angeles or the move to Los Angeles, the relocation to Los Angeles, may not happen for any franchise until 2017 now at the earliest.
Yeah, and look, I'm looking at the attendance numbers now in the National Football League for the 2015 season, and Cincinnati, who lost their second game of the year, they fell to 8-2 last night with that loss to Arizona. They played 5 home games. They averaged 400 more people at a home game than Jacksonville. 400. They're selling 93% of their tickets for home games there in Cincinnati. What the heck is wrong with that fan base that they're not completely filling that thing up to go watch that football team play right now? Or maybe it's just a problem that is across the National Football League trying to convince people to get out of their homes and go to games on Sundays instead of just watch it from the comfort of their living room, especially with the blackout rules basically lifted at this point in time. It's a football problem. It's not an individual team-by-team problem at this point, and that there are still people that are attached to the National Football League that people listen to, whether they should or shouldn't, that continue to make this dialogue go on and on, it seems like forever, that they continue to spout this ignorance is the real problem with this situation. Somebody's going to L.A. because the NFL finally really wants somebody in L.A. And they've been holding it over teams' heads to get stadiums rebuilt and do all these different things now for 20 years. And now somebody's going to wind up in L.A. It's just the question of who it's going to be out of those three teams.
Who it's going to be and maybe or which couple out of those three teams and when exactly they're going to arrive there. Actually, 360 fans per week is how many more Cincinnati packs in. I guess they're shipping off to maybe they're going to play in Mexico City. They're going to play their home games in Mexico City from now on. We just don't know with the Cincinnati Bengals. But it is funny. I'm just disappointed because Leroy Butler is a Jacksonville legend, you know, and I'd like somebody who calls this his hometown and I would hope cares a little bit about the success or the future of the franchise. Maybe he doesn't, to be a little bit more informed before he goes spouting off about LA, here they come, when it refers to the Jacksonville Jaguars. So wasn't too happy about that, but just wanted to point that out. If anybody missed it, you can go find it in Leroy Butler's timeline at Leap 36. I'll give him credit. I don't know if he's gotten any feedback on it one way or another. I don't know if anybody noticed, but he's at least left it up there. So many people will pull things down once they get challenged on them, which I find amusing as well. Hey, somebody sent us in on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, Tony, a text at 641-1010 that asked us to remind listeners to vote for the young Jaguars to the Pro Bowl, and also that Houston has the Patriots left on their schedule, which we certainly understand as far as that goes. When we were talking about the relative strengths of the schedules going forward, that's one game out of six, however. But regardless, in terms of Pro Bowl voting for the Jacksonville Jaguars, you certainly can do that right now at NFL.com. As a matter of fact, when we come back, we'll take a look at the ballot and maybe give a look at who we would be leaning towards if we had to fill this thing out today. You can vote for, as it's no longer broken up by conference, you basically, like, you vote for six quarterbacks. And are there six? How many quarterbacks are so clearly cut a head and shoulders above Blake Bortles this year? We'll take a look at that, for instance, and where some of these wide receivers fit in as well on the Pro Bowl landscape. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you on a Wild West Guns and Gold Money. It's Jaguars today. If you'd like to get on board, 641-1010, the number here on 1010XL, 92.5 FM. All right, Wild West Guns and Gold Money continues here. Jaguars today live at Everbank. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, 1010XL, 92.5 FM. We'll get to some Pro Bowl comparisons. I do think, for instance, Allen Robinson actually does have a shot to make the Pro Bowl this year, and not being by being like the sixth alternate this year. And could anyone else pop in there? Could Allen Robinson pop in there for one is the thing. He's going up against more established guys, but his stats certainly merit inclusion in the conversation very heavily. We'll get to that coming up. 641-1010. Let's get a couple of calls, though. I think people wanted to react to the point I made about what Leroy Butler had to say on Twitter the other night, which to me was just disappointing. But let's get Jake on the west side up next here on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Jake. How are you?
I'm good. How about you?
Good. What's on your mind?
As far as the stadium being empty, like the only parts that were empty were like the sideline areas, and there were so many people walking around in the bud zone and everything. The only problem I had was the people that left with 6 minutes left to go in the game.
Yeah, I hear you. That's a different story. At least I don't think that's what he was referring to when he tweeted that out. Because typically, Tony, you get those shots, you get them from behind the bench in those club seat areas.
Right.
And those are the people that, whether they're down, they're probably not in the bud zone coming from the club seats, but they could very well be inside.
Can we just acknowledge that attendance numbers as a measuring stick of a fan base is stupid? It's stupid. And that it continues at any level. I got a Packers fan that's going after me on the Twitter, on the text line right now. No one said the Packers are a bad fan base, right? You used to have a small stadium. You've expanded it to 80,000. You're still filling it up because the Packers are the Packers. And yeah, if it was 80,000 here every week, then it would look pretty dumb because there would be a bunch of empty seats here at Everbank Field. But using attendance as a measuring stick for where a fan base is right now or where a team is just stupid.
Oh, beyond that, the idea of how uninformed you have to be to think that Jacksonville's in the Los Angeles conversation is
right.
kind of crazy to me. That to me is the more disappointing part of his tweet.
Right, that there are 60,000 people showing up to watch a football team that has had the success of the Jacksonville Jaguars in the last decade is a miracle.
Right,
that
shows you positive.
Right, that shows you how much of a fan base this team actually has in this city, because there aren't a whole lot of places that would still be showing up to watch a football team that has been this bad for a decade.
All right, let's get Ken in St. Augustine next up this morning on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Ken. How are you?
Good, guys. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Hey, listen, the reason I called in, I have the opinion of another defensive back that I think we should all care about a little bit more. So after the game, my son and I waited out for the players. Jonathan Cyprian came up to us, and, you know, we were thanking him, telling him what a great game he had. He turned to us and said, no, thank you guys. It was the fans that created a penalty at the end of the game. Then it was the fans' energy that helped us stop them on that last drive. So to get what Leroy Butler thinks, I think Jonathan Cyprian opinion is a little more important.
All right, hey, thanks, man. Look, every Jag I heard talk after the game referenced what the crowd was like and how intense it was, and I think it was the best atmosphere down the stretch in any game this year. At least those are the kind of comments that I heard. And again, we're at a disadvantage engaging that. Either if you're in the press box, Tony, you're behind glass, and you can't really get the true sense of what it sounds like out there. Trust us, it definitely mutes it to a great degree.
And it felt loud this week, though.
And I'm in the studio, and everything you heard, I mean, Gus Bradley immediately after the game referencing that, players referencing that. I'm not trying to make the case like, here's why you should believe the fans are good. I can't believe that Leroy Butler thinks his team is moving to Los Angeles. I mean, that's what I can't get beyond.
It's laughable.
It really is. Like, Leroy, stick to your Packers, I guess, or whatever. I'm sure he does plenty of good stuff. This is Roy Miller, by the way, after the game. Immediately, this is 15 minutes after the game, if that, right? Right outside the probably 5 to 10 minutes after the game, with Jeff Logman, I believe, outside the victorious or just inside the victorious Jaguar locker room.
Those fans were wired up today. It was just an amazing feeling to hear everybody just yelling Duval and go Jags, and just to be back home. We haven't been home, like you said, in a while, and we got some incredible fans that have stuck through, you know, with us thick and thin. Just feels good to give them something to be proud of.
Yeah, look, again, we understand what the support's been like, Tony, and you made the point. For a team that's won as few games as they've won now, what have they won? 13 games in 3.5 seasons, right, is what it comes down to, with 9 in the previous 3 years. So
sure.
13 games in a little over 3.5 seasons. Many fan bases would be staying away in droves. This, to me, is more about a local guy in Leroy Butler, a phenomenal player who clearly has not kept up with what's happening with this organization. 641-1010 if you want to get in. Levi is in Orange Park. He wants to weigh in on our conversation about some of these young Jags and could they possibly make the Pro Bowl. What's up, Levi? How are you?
Yeah, you were talking about Allen Robinson and all the other guys with 1010 and some other people. I always talk about Allen Robinson this, Allen Robinson that. Has your Hearns got about the same stats, if not better, and made more perfect catches? Don't ever mention about Hearns, because
Levi, have you ever listened to this program before, ever?
I listen to y'all all day, every day.
Do you all day, every day? Really? So, Levi, who did I say last week several times was the MVP of the Jacksonville Jaguars to this point in the season?
Well, y'all say Allen Robinson, then possibly.
No. Levi, you listen all day, every day. Who did I say is the MVP of this team going into this past Thursday night's game?
Well, I must have missed that 2 minutes.
You must have, Levi. Thank you for the call, okay? You listen all day, every day. You guys never mention Allen Hurns, the guy I said has been the MVP of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We never mention Allen Hurns.
Yeah.
Levi, you listen all day, every day. I think the definitions of all are escaping you. All and day and every.
We both said that we thought Allen Hurns was the MVP of this team. I said he's my favorite player on the roster. Right. Now.
We talk about Allen Hurns all the freaking time on this show, all right? Honestly. But right now, I mean, almost to the point, Tony, where I feel like we've not given enough credit to Allen Robinson for what he's done, right? Because Hurns is such a good story as an undrafted free agent. Allen Robinson now statistically has pulled even in the touchdown department. He is ahead of him statistically in other departments, yardage, yards per catch, things like that. So, Allen Robinson is going to get more notice nationally, too, because of his draft position. That's just the way that works, in part, right? And he's, despite the fact that Hurns led this team in receiving last year, now both of these guys in tandem, and the fact that they're both named Allen, right? I mean, have a little bit of cachet. No, seriously, right? I mean, you're looking for things that, sure, for people to remember about a team that doesn't get much national exposure because they're on in this market, they're on in the market of the team that they're playing that week, and that's about it. So most people around the country have not, unless they're watching some red zone highlights, have not seen the Jaguars play, with the exception maybe of Thursday night. And on Thursday night, it was Allen Robinson who came through, but please, Allen Hurns gets tons of love.
Listening is a skill.
I guess listening accurately is a skill. Allen Hurns is on once or twice a week with the guys on the drill every, you know, on weekday mornings, and they talk him up all the time. I mean, you listen all day every day. Apparently you don't. I mean, honestly. Let's go to, where are we going next? Andrew on the south side chiming in next on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Andrew. How are you?
You're great. Yourself?
Good, thanks. What's up?
Not much. I wanted to touch on, you know, the post-game with the players. My little boy, 3 years now, they're always nice for the most part. You know, there's a few that don't want to sign autographs, but they sit and they talk. And, you know, some of them try to disguise themselves, and my son can rat them out, especially Carson Tinker, who he read his book last year. Just incredible. And even if we're sadly, even my son's smiling with a picture or two when we come out of it. So that's what it's all about for me. And I wanted to touch on you guys. You guys do a great show. You, Tony, Log, Ono's, impeccable. It's really nice to see in good and bad times, and I think I wrote you guys a letter about that. You're phenomenal, and it makes a great listen for 2 hours while I'm at work. You take care.
All right. Well, I would also question your listening aptitude if you think we're impeccable, all right? So let's not go too far the other way. We appreciate it.
I just misspoke
it
about the size of Lambo. I'm certainly not impeccable.
All right. Andrew, we appreciate the support, but, you know, Logs, Ono's, O'Howard, and those guys, Tony, impeccable. I'm just happy to be here, sir. Let's go to Austin and Neptune Beach next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Austin.
Yo, hey, I was just calling in about the attendance. I mean, do y'all have issue with people who leave like 6 minutes early, you know, on Thursday night?
I wouldn't leave 6 minutes early when it's a one possession game. I mean, you pay the money, you can do whatever you like.
But I don't show up to games late, and I don't leave them early. That's been my policy since I started going to sporting events.
Yeah, no, I'm feeling it. What was that? I mean, like, I was one who left 6 minutes early, even though I was there before the game started and everything. Just when you got work the next morning on Friday, you know, it's different than a 1 o'clock game on a Sunday, but, you know, for the most part, I'm there every game the whole time. So I don't know if that was a big issue for people leaving 6 minutes early or whatever. So,
well, but I think it factored in. I mean, you left under what circumstances would have compelled you to stay to the very end of that game, I guess, would be.
I guess I had it pre-planned that, you know, when you got work in the morning, you got to get up at 5. You know, at that point when you have to wait in traffic and everything, that I think is time. But, you know, I was saying, I mean, at least some of those people were there. At least I was there. You know,
you pay your ticket price. You can do whatever you like. I would say this, talking to a lot of Jaguar fans who were there, they felt like their reach a point in the game. Was it when Blake threw the pick to Julius Thomas? I'm trying to think of the exact moment.
That was around there.
Around that point when it started a mass exodus and it didn't seem to be all tied to people needing to get up for work the next day. That's your life. That's your prerogative, man. You got to get up the next day. If that's pre-planned, that's fine. Would you have left if it was a tie ball game? I don't know. I do think, based on the anecdotal evidence, and again, I'm not sitting up there. I don't watch, you know, I'm not watching. I don't know how many people left or not, but I've heard enough fans tell me that bunches of people got up and left with about 6 minutes left because they felt like the Jags had blown their chance to win the game.
If you're a fan who showed up and said at 10:45, I'm leaving, you know, or at 11 o'clock, I'm leaving because I have to go to work tomorrow, and it doesn't matter what the score of the game is, whatever's going on, I got to go. But wanted to be a part of the Thursday night atmosphere. Okay, that's one thing. I don't think that's what everybody was doing.
That's
getting
my
up
guess.
And leaving.
They all didn't set their clock for the same
because
exact time.
You see the same thing. If San Diego takes a 10-point lead with 6 minutes to go in this game on Sunday, guess what? There's going to be thousands of people getting up and leaving because that's what people do in that circumstance in football stadiums. everywhere across the country.
Right.
And it doesn't matter the circumstance.
This was not a double-digit lead.
No.
This was not a two-possession
game. And it doesn't matter the circumstance. I mean, it happens in every sport, too. We saw the story with the Miami Heat fans leaving that game in the finals a couple years ago before they came back to win that thing against the Spurs. This is what people do. They leave when they think it, when in their mind, when they have made their decision that this is done, I've seen enough, people leave. And sometimes when you make that decision, you miss out on something pretty cool because it is sports and things happen in sporting events, especially closely contested sporting events. You don't want to miss out on those opportunities to be there for that kind of thing. It's why I don't ever turn off Sunday or Monday Night Football. Like, I don't care what the score is. There could be something that happens in this game. 14 points? Well, what if they come back? I want to say I was watching, so
right.
I'll stick it through. That my fantasy impact.
We saw Peyton bring the Colts back against the Bucks, 21 points with about six minutes left, and that's Gruden's got to reference that every chance he gets. By the way, the sheriff. All right, let's get one more in before we break. That would be Alan in East Arlington. Next up this morning on 1010 XL. Hi, Alan.
Yeah, first off, I want to invite every one of those people that left early in the game to come on back and watch the whole game, this next game, and every other game. But what I wanted to do is I wanted to bring up the point that it was impressive, all the people that were actually at the stadium, given that it was a cold, rainy day, and a week before we had a terror attack in Paris, and we found out that these guys are trying to target soft spots with sporting events. And with all the people that showed up, said, you know what, I don't give a damn about these terror threats. We're going to watch this game. I thought that was pretty impressive.
Yeah. Oh, look, again, you're not going to get us to argue with you. We think the Jag fans have been impressive. Just take that out of the mix, just based on, like we said, the turnout, based on the percentage of wins that they've had over the last 3.5 years. So no arguments here. But that's another factor, Tony. I will say this. I do, you know, for me, we come to work here. It doesn't factor into my thinking, although I don't think it didn't cross my mind at some point. Hey, we're the next, you know, we're the big Thursday night game here. We're the standalone thing for the National Football League. Now, look, these things are planned out over time generally, and I think security is pretty good here at the stadium and around, you know, the National Football League in general, you know, with the, and the, you know, just remember the next time you're maybe inconvenienced or delayed a little bit getting through a wanding or a pat down or whatever, that there's good reason behind it, but it is a good point, you know, and, you know, hopefully we don't get to the point in America where we're staying away from large gatherings because of that fear, unless there's some direct threat to that. But, Alan, thank you for making the point. We appreciate that. I don't know if we're going to get to all the Pro Bowl stuff, but I do want to run down some of Allen Robinson and Allen Hurns' stats and where they compare to some of the top wide receivers in the league, and maybe we'll look at the ballot
Wait, a little
bit deeper.
We need to talk about
that. No, we're going to, Tony, because I'm glad that I got reminded to that we never talk about Allen Hurns. We should probably mention him as well on this program here on Jaguars Today. It's a Wild West Guns and Gold Money. We'll come back. We'll do that. We'll take a look at the fan feedback spotlight, which basically just wants to know what you did with yourself on Sunday. How much NFL did you consume with the Jaguars off? I've seen everything from every second I could get my eyes on to, you know what, my team was off. And I took the day off as well and everything in between. So we'll get to that coming up as well. Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony here with you. Jaguars Today on 1010 XL, 92.5 FM. All right, down the stretch they come. Tony, any wide receivers you'd like to mention by name before we get out of here today?
Brian Walters.
Yes,
I don't think he gets
we don't
enough.
Talk about that guy enough.
Marquise Lee.
Excellent.
Doesn't feel like his name comes up nearly
what
enough.
What about Neil Sterling? Okay.
He was active.
I actually did get a Facebook message from my cousin Gene up in New Jersey who said, I forget what it was, like a relative of his went to school with Neil Sterling or something along those lines. So he wanted to know his status. He was active. That was his status.
He's playing special teams.
Well, special team action right there. Rashad Green, another wide receiver that bears mentioning on this football team.
Shaq Evans.
Shaq Evans, good call by Tyler Devitt right there.
I feel like they really blew it when they let Jarrett Dillard walk out the door a couple years ago.
Still kicking myself over that one. Well, if I could think of anybody else, we'll get around to mentioning them. Let's get a couple of calls in. We will get to some of the numbers of these wide receivers that are maybe getting their name in consideration for the Pro Bowl. We'll take a look maybe on Wednesday. We'll take a look as we head deeper into the week. It's a short week for us because we got Loggy in tomorrow. looking back on the film from last Thursday. And, you know, I think Telvin Smith, you know, where he ranks among the league leaders in tackles, might be under some consideration. Paul Posluszny also among the top tacklers in the National Football League. Those are the kind of things that are going to get on people, catch people's eye, right? I mean, when you go through and we sit there and say, hey, how is so-and-so playing this year in Detroit? Well, if he's a linebacker, one of the things we'd look at is, well, how many tackles? Where does he rank in the league if we're not watching a lot of Detroit football? So meaningful or not, those are some of the stats that would catch people's eye. Let's get Derek and Mandarin up next, though, on the phone lines at 641-1010. Good morning, Derek. How are you?
Good. How are you guys?
Good, thanks.
I would like to think that running back is one of the easier positions for a fan to analyze. You know, and I just don't believe Gerhardt is very good. I don't see why they just don't cut it and pick up a guy off the street. I mean, didn't Rouse the Seattle run for 200 yards? I know who that guy is.
Well, I mean, okay, Thomas Rawls was an undrafted free agent, and kudos for Seattle for having him on the roster. I think, wasn't he in Dallas before he got cut in Dallas? I think he was, and
maybe,
then Seattle picked him up this year. But he's been on the roster. If they felt like there was a guy like Thomas Rawls out there, maybe they would. But, I mean, Toby Gerhardt has been marginalized at this point in time, Tony. Does it matter all that much? If you were to pick up another running back, barring injuries to T.J. Yeldon, Denard Robinson, and maybe Bernard Pierce, that guy wouldn't see the field anyway, right? So if you could pick up a guy maybe you thought could help you more on special teams, maybe they'd do that. I don't know too many people I've talked to who think Toby Gerhardt will be back with the football team next year. You wouldn't save any money because if Toby got cut, he'd probably take his termination pay. You can take that one time as a vested veteran if you're on the opening day roster, and the Jags would still end up paying him for the rest of the year anyway. So, you know, I don't know if there's much of a benefit to getting rid of him at this point in time. If they felt like there was another guy out there, certainly. I'm sure they're combing. It's not like Thomas Rawls came off the street this week. Thomas Rawls has been on Seattle's roster all year long. So, you know, is Toby great? No. But is he hurting you by having him on the roster? Is that keeping you from finding the next great thing? I'm sure they're looking around. And if they felt like the next great thing was out there, they would find room for the next great thing somehow, right? That's kind of how I look at that.
No, he was signed as an undrafted free agent in May by the Seahawks.
He was in May.
Yeah.
So he's been with the Seahawks the whole time.
Yep.
For some reason, maybe it's the Kristen Michael thing that makes me think that he. You know what it might have been? I think there was some talk about Thomas Rawls in the preseason that if he had gotten let go, he might be a target of the Cowboys, something like that. But anyway. He's been up there, and you could say, hey, well, guess what? The Jags missed out on Thomas Rawls. Well, so did every other team in the National Football League.
Sure.
And Thomas Rawls has played well this year. Give him credit for what he's gotten done. But I don't think Toby Gerhardt's presence on the roster is holding this team back because he's not playing much at this point in time. He's healthy and active at this point in time. But regardless, appreciate the call. All right, that brings us to a few of these statistics I just wanted to ponder in terms of receiving. All right, up to the moment, in terms of receiving yardage in the National Football League, Tony, how many, I don't know if you're looking at the numbers, how many receivers in the NFL have more yardage than Allen Robinson, would you guess?
My guess would be 9.
How about Julio Jones, right? Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, Larry Fitzgerald, Demaryius Thomas. That's it.
So that's 5.
Five guys, and Thomas has 4 more yards than Allen Robinson does. At this point in the season, of those guys who have more yardage than him, how many have more touchdowns than the 7 that Allen Robinson scored? Out of those 5, how many do you think?
Hopkins.
Hopkins has 9. That's it. I'll just cut you off right there. That's it. He's the only guy. Now Julio is 6. Antonio Brown is 5. Those guys are Pro Bowl receivers. I have no question with Julio Jones, Antonio Brown, DeAndre Hopkins, even Larry Fitz making the Pro Bowl this year. You know, he's got 7 touchdown receptions of his own. He's got 926 yards, but Allen Robinson has 871 yards, more than Odell Beckham Jr., more than A.J. Green, more than Calvin Johnson, more than anybody else that we haven't named. Those are the immediate guys behind him. Rob Gronkowski could overtake him with a nice night tonight, but he's a tight end, and he's not competing for
the
same
spot. How
many
wide receivers go?
6, I believe.
Okay.
It's got to be more than that, right? Maybe it's 8. Maybe it's 8. I know it's 6 quarterbacks. It might be more than that, right?
Yeah, you would think it'd be more than that. I would think 8 maybe 10.
All right, let me see if I can dig it right up. I just closed the ballot because the ballot was frustrating me because it had a stats on there. Like the up-to-date ballot, if you go in there today, it has stats from 2 weeks ago. Like the stats are not updated. They're updated through like week 9 of the National Football League. All right, let me see. 8. That's it. So 8 out of 8 guys, only 5 receivers in the National Football League have more receiving yards than Allen Robinson.
Yeah.
And
so he's got a chance.
I think he does have a chance.
Odell's going to go.
I would think because
on a fan vote, he's going to go.
Name recognition is going to play a role in this for sure.
So he's got a chance.
AJ Green may go as well. Again, these guys have been there. They've done that. I mean, it wouldn't put past people to vote in Calvin Johnson on name recognition.
No.
But, you know, again, you start to add all these guys up and you look at the strength of the season, Allen Robinson, then when you factor in yards per catch. He's phenomenal compared to some of these other guys and what they've been able to do in terms of full-time players in the National Football League. I mean, he is he's catching over 17 yards per grab is what he's putting up right now, which dwarfs guys like Julio Jones and Antonio Brown and DeAndre Hopkins. All
right.
These guys are deep threats.
Yep.
So he's been a big playmaker. There's no question about it. Hearns has been fantastic as well. Had a quieter game, and I do think that will hurt him because it did come on national television. But he's averaging 16.3 yards a catch with 716 yards. There's just a lot of guys in that 700-yard threshold range.
Yeah.
And, you know, I certainly don't think two Jaguar wide receivers are making the Pro Bowl. Maybe none make it this year, and maybe none make it on the original 8, but there's always some attrition. I think at least one of these guys ends up playing in the Pro Bowl this year just due to normal attrition that we get at the end of every year. This guy needs a cleanup surgery. This guy needs that.
Sure.
Or this guy's making a deep playoff run and he's not going to play.
Look, one of them should be in the Pro Bowl. I don't care how they get there. One of those two guys should be in the Pro Bowl when everything is said and done for 2015 to represent what this Jaguars passing attack has been.
Represent.
I mean, look, they've been good enough that they could probably both be Pro Bowlers this year. At least one of them needs to be to represent this Jacksonville team because, look, they haven't had anything like this in a while. To expect both of them to be there would be a little much.
You have to go really far down the list to find a guy who's averaging more yards per catch than Allen Robinson because you're going to have to go down to Marquise Wilson of the Chicago Bears, who only has 24 catches. Obviously, the more catches you have, the harder it is to maintain that high average, right? He's only caught 24 balls for 420 yards, and he's just a tick ahead of Allen Robinson at 17.5 compared to 17.4, and then Malcolm Floyd right behind that with 19.5. He's nothing but that's all he runs is deep stuff, pretty much. And, you know, he's only caught 21 balls this year, so small sample size. Among guys that have caught anywhere close to the equivalent of what Allen Robinson has done, he dwarfs everybody in terms of yards per catch. And so Blake Bortles is driving it down the field. We'll see if that factors in as well in terms of the amount of catches. But all these things factor in, and there's an unknown factor with Allen Robinson, too, that he's fighting against. Today's fan feedback spotlight, Tony, asking folks how they spent their Sunday, basically. How much NFL did they consume? What kind of feedback did we get?
Here's what we got from Daniel. I watched every game I could from 1 p.m. to 12 a.m. from JP. More than I wanted. Damn NASCAR rain delay. From Christoph, a lot of games, but there's nothing compared to watching at Everbank Field in Section 124. Hashtag thanks, guys. We'll see you Sunday, Stoff. From Chris, watched enough to hate the Jets and Falcons even more. How did the AFC South win? From Rob, about twice as much because I wasn't in a drunken rage by 4 o'clock. From Irish Jag, I watched Red Zone but kept falling asleep as I only arrived home yesterday morning. From Eric, every game made available to me on cable. Even had time to replace 2 sinks in the house. From Cristiano, the whole day. And from Demetrius, I watched the division leaders play and unfortunately win in turmoil-driven San Diego team who we play next. I saw one other tweet that came in that said that you can watch on Red Zone yesterday when the Jaguars aren't playing, you see how much bad football there is around the league. There's a lot of it. There are a lot of not very good football teams in the NFL this year, and I think you get tunnel vision sometimes here in Jacksonville as to what this team is. And really, when you compare it to where the league is right now, they're okay. they're okay and they're a young, developing football team. I actually think the direction for it, if it continues like it has here in the last month, is pretty darn good.
Right.
Heading into the end of 2015 and 2016.
You got a lot of struggling teams out there that don't have an answer at the quarterback position, right? They may have a temporary answer, and that temporary answer may even be playing fairly well at this point in time. But how sustainable is that situation? And that's, I think, still the greatest hope here in Jacksonville, is that Blake Bortles is still developing and getting better and better, and hopefully that touchdown number will continue to rise, that interception number will start to fall down on the other side. But for now, it is what it is, and isn't that always the case? All right, Mike Dempsey, Fat Tony, wrapping things up on this Monday. Thanks for spending some time with us here. We appreciate John Osier stopping by with an Oh No segment. We appreciate Wild West Guns and Gold, our Monday sponsor. Jeff Logman will be by tomorrow. We'll look at the tape from last Thursday. So if you want to get in with Logs, that's certainly your opportunity to do that. Hopefully we're going to catch up with Spencer Tillman, I think, tomorrow as well. He'll be on, Solomon Wilcox will be on the call. What did I say? Spencer Tillman, I did say that. Solomon Wilcox will be on the call of the Jags game against San Diego coming up. So we'll try to get a bit of a national perspective and see if he's doing his homework on this football team, if we get a chance to talk to him coming up. Short week, so get in over the course of the next 2 days before we send you off into the Thanksgiving holiday. That does it for us today. For Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, for Fat Tony and all of our guests today, I'm Mike Dempsey, wrapping things up. Thanks for listening to Jaguars Today here on 1010XL 92.5 FM. Hey folks, Mike Dempsey here for Dandy Foods. Want to tell you all about the value that they present every single day. It's really what you want, no matter what you're forking over your hard-earned money for. But when it comes to food, whether it's a sit-down meal at your favorite restaurant or a quick bite to eat for lunch, you want to get your money's worth. Everyone does. That's where my friends at Dandy come in, and they've been coming in for 59-plus years. They've been making delicious sandwiches and subs for nearly six decades. You don't hang around that long without providing your customers quality products at a price that makes you feel like you got your money's worth. The Thompson family made a commitment to quality way back in 1956, and they made it a priority for nearly six decades. Fresh, delicious, anytime deli flatbreads and specialty subs, or quality wholesome Dandy sandwiches. You simply can't go wrong. If you're looking for value for your hard-earned money, check out the sandwich case at your next stop at a Kangaroo Express and look for a family of fresh products made by a family you can trust, the Thompson family, the makers of Dandy and the Anytime Deli line. Folks, anytime you're hungry, do what I do. Make yours a Dandy today.
Now, Duval, give me two claps and a Rick Flap.
Woo! That's great job!